Democrat of the day is Minnesota House District 51A. Sandra Mason is the representative down there running for re-election this time around. She just came on off the regular session on Sunday. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about the regular session and her re-election campaign. Representative, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. I would be remiss. I always get whenever I get a sitting senator or a sitting representative, I always talk about the session. Your thoughts on how this session ended? I know it's kind of unique because with the current emergency, I think the House and Senate were automatically going to be called into session because they have to be given the opportunity to overrule a governor's decision. So that was already a given, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. So the regular session was that it seems to have taken a lot of the bluster out of the end of session. I mean, it seems so quiet. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are surprised. Usually there's this mad rush and, you know, omnibus prime bills and stuff like that. But the reality is already the legislators, particularly the Republicans, seem to be looking towards June as really when the negotiations are going to happen. Is that correct?
I would say that's fairly accurate. I think the fact that the bonding bill didn't get passed before we officially ended was a real disappointment. But again, I think when you heard some people talking, they were thinking they still had another swing at it because we were going to be coming back.
What was when the Republicans? What was their main concern against the bonding bill as it stood? I mean, I know that there was some up in the Senate, there was some contentious nature about any amendments and stuff like this. And as Susan Kent, I think I saw her quote saying, well, if you want to make sure you're not going to pass a bill that needs 3/5 votes, then you're sure doing a great job of it. But in the House, what did you see as the main objections to the bonding bill?
What they were saying is that they thought it was too large. And I think the chair of capital investment or the bonding committee was Mary Murphy, and I think she made a really strong case for the bill that she presented. She said, item one, we are so far behind in projects to begin with. Secondly, we want to get the economy moving, and we know that, you know, most of the project, well, probably all the projects in the bonding bill would mean we would be putting people to work. And at this point, the interest rates are really low. So there's really not a good reason other than the fact that they just thought it was too much and they're afraid that there wouldn't be enough money. But, I mean, if we get the jobs going and we're paying people compensation, they're going to be spending money. So mm-hmm. I think her argument that we need to be bold. This is the time where we really need to step up to the plate and take care of all these projects that have been lingering on for years and years.
And I'm saying this. My observation has generally been, especially with the Republicans in the last 8 years, is that they're not against spending. It's just they're for spending in their district and their districts only on specific projects. They love spending money there. But when it comes to a district which they either can't win or is currently held by a Democrat, and we saw this under the Kurt Daut regime, those districts, those projects generally fall by the wayside. That's how they considered this. It did seem as to me that there was an element. I mean, even Kurt Daut made the comment about a lot of these are just small town projects. Well, yeah, but that's the concept. You're getting into these small towns. As you said, you're job creating. You're creating income for a lot of people. You're encouraging spending, but you're also taking area projects which are long overdue in many cases. I just think that the problem is that I think the Republicans are so sold on the idea of them being the kingmaker, the decider on who does and who doesn't get what, that's why I think overall that they were against that bill.
And that you could be very right on that particular argument. And I think what the chair said was, I mean, Kurt Daut, there's a project in the bill in Kurt Daut's district. So it just doesn't make sense unless you're playing games. But as I said, I mean, there are so many projects in especially. And because I said I've always been on transportation, there's a number having to do with transportation projects, we know how far behind we are in those.
Yes.
And there are a number of projects having to do with infrastructure, particularly water. And we know that that is a major issue. And to get some of the infrastructure for water for these little towns is, I mean, it's almost impossible. They just do not have that much money or revenue coming in that they can do it all on their own. They do need help from the state.
Well, and you brought up the politics of this. Is, I mean, in the age of Trump and his reelection campaign, and really he is not as popular as he was marginally popular enough in 2016 to win. He's not as popular then. I mean, I don't deny there's a politics game here. Do you feel as if there's a legit chance the House Republicans could torpedo the bonding bill overall just so that they can have the argument of, you know what, we didn't spend money. We basically, we're not going to do some pork barrel bill and we're not going to spend the money when reality is they're actually hurting a lot of communities by doing so just so they have a campaign talking point?
I guess that is a really major concern of mine. I mean, there are so many people that want the bonding bill, you know, whether they're in transportation, whether they're in city government. I mean, there are so many projects and such a variety of projects within the bonding bill, and everybody seems to want it that except the Republican leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is, you know, what they're trying to do is they're, you know, what they were saying on the floor is the fact that they want to save money, that this is not the time to spend. And again, I mean, I think Chair Murphy made the argument. I mean, this is the time. I mean, the interest rates are low. We need to get people going back to work. And some of these projects have been on the books for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and it is a double-edged sword. I mean, if they do want to knock this down, you know, Democrats can play politics, too, and say, hey, we would have had this project built if not for the Republicans. So if they want to play this game, let them play the game. I know Health and Human Services is near and dear to you.
Yes.
Talk a little bit. I mean, obviously, in the age of COVID-19, this is anything with Health and Human Services, as far as a normal political cycle or bill cycle, is out the window. Talk about how things went and you know, where you think things are right now for the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Item one, I think what COVID-19 has done is made it very clear how important healthcare access is. You know, we went through the process making sure that anybody that thought that they had COVID-19, they would be covered if they went to a provider or doctor, et cetera. I mean, it is that important. And hopefully people have learned from this that we need a healthcare system in which everyone has decent access, so that everyone can be healthy. Because if you've got one or two people that are not healthy, and in this case, having something contagious, it impacts all of us. It's not just the people that have the most money that should have the best health care. It's something that everybody needs to have, because one person can infect everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you brought that up, I mean, that's, you know, kind of what something like a pandemic does, is it exposes the faults within the system. America has the best health care on the planet. It just is. It's unattainable because of the cost of it. And
exactly.
There doesn't seem to be any kind of element here outside of token gestures to change that system. I mean, I'm 100%. I think Governor Walz has done a fantastic job. I think that there has been some bipartisan effort, especially coming out of the Senate. But the reality is that we are only looking at Band-Aids on a gunshot wound at this point. And if we don't really start looking at our healthcare system as a whole, I mean, it, you know, you've got Republicans running around the Capitol without face masks on, for goodness sakes. I mean,
I'm glad you noticed that, because
yeah.
I find that really concerning.
Oh, I find the fact that they keep going to these rallies really concerning. I mean, it's the idea that they can somehow negotiate with science, that you know, reality and facts, that they are somewhat, they feel as if they got enough gumption and they're speaking from their gut and they're yell loud enough that they somehow can bend reality to their will.
Well, they've been doing the same thing with climate change for the number of years.
Yes.
As well, it's the same thing where they're ignoring facts, science, and just putting in their take and try, just repeating it, hoping people will believe it.
Do you feel as if, I mean, obviously the big concern is, you know, with your position there in the House where you could be able to address this. I mean, obviously my big concern right now is the second wave. If you've read about pandemics in the past, generally it's not the first wave of cases, which is the really bad one. It's the second. And we never really in this country or in Minnesota shut down like other places did, where they are now starting to reopen things up more effectively. I am very concerned about this. How quick do you feel as if the House is ready to go work with the governors, work with the Senate in regards to getting things back if all of a sudden things start looking really bleak again?
If they start looking what?
Bleak again, looking bad again.
I guess I think that could be a problem. As he said, if you're looking at most Republicans, you will not in the Capitol, they're not wearing masks. And I can tell you the Speaker has made that a major issue, that we need to be wearing masks so that, we need to protect each other, but more important, we need to protect the staff that's there, because without the staff, we cannot operate. So for people to go into the chamber without masks, I think is just so incredibly inconsiderate. And it could be dangerous. I mean, it is that important. And just the thought that people are willing to gamble on other people's health, I think, is just outrageous. But I do want to make it clear. I mean, the Speaker has asked time and again that when people come into the chamber, they are wearing masks.
Well, I don't understand how people can try to turn the reaction to a pandemic into a political thing. But I mean, I think for them, they're looking for any angle they can at this point. Let's talk, if you're okay, let's talk your district here, because you do have a reelection campaign.
Thank you.
51A here, which is basically Western Eagan and kind of the northern part of Burnsville, right?
Exactly.
Ah, it's a lovely district. I've been doing, considering the governor has allowed us to do hikes, I have been down in your district multiple times over the last few weeks and been able to enjoy. You've got beautiful parkland down there. There's a lot of great parks, and I've been down in 51A quite a few times.
And that is good. That's basically how I got my start, was when we moved to Eagan, there were so few parks, and I went over to City Hall to say, you know, could they at least mow a field near me so the kids would have a place to play? And eventually I got on the park commission, and that's when we started our 10-year plans, when I was on the park commission. And I think that is what most people think about when they think about Eagan, is the numerous parks and trails that we have here.
As you're looking towards the next session here, what specific issue would you like to champion for 51A? That's, you know, kind of more of a specific for your district issue.
It's in my area, you know, we are in actually fairly good shape. I know that a couple of things that are really important, especially on the Burnsville side, it has to do with the landfill and getting the closed landfill property cleaned, and the city would like to redevelop it, and that's doing anything with a landfill is incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
So that is one major issue there. I think we do have some projects as far as some trails going into the area. That is also very important. I guess one thing that I think that was a disappointment this year was the fact that we didn't get the mail-in votes mm-hmm. passed, that people are going to have to do the absentee ballot route. But I think, you know, again, that doing the easy balloting by doing the mail-in was something that was really important to my area. So we need to get through this year, but it does look like people are concerned about whether people will be turning out to go to polls if they're opening. I mean, and also getting people to volunteer at the polls, because most of you people that volunteer typically have been those that are over 60.
Yeah. No, and that was a major problem they had in Wisconsin, is that a lot of poll workers are 60 plus, been doing it for years, and you know, there's a tendency for people that are in the primary demographic of a pandemic that targets, you know, people, that they basically have a tendency of not wanting to go out and be in large public gatherings, for goodness sakes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I agree with you. I'm glad the absentee ballot is an option there. I know Steve Simons worked on that quite a bit. But as well, you're right. It would have been a mail-in option in this day and age with this crisis going on. Hopefully, it you know, it does subside. You know, we can always, you know, pray for that. But the reality is that if this does come back, that could end up, you know, we could end up having some big problems with this election cycle.
Right. And the other thing that is important to my area is transportation. And as I said, that's something I've always been on. And it started when I was on the Eagan City Council, where I served on the board for the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. And we've come a long ways, but we still need, you know, first of all, we still need money for roads and bridges.
Yeah.
But we also need to be able to expand our the public transit, because we've got a lot of good jobs out here, but people need to be able to get here and get here in a reasonable amount of time. So that's the other thing that I'm looking for, is for us to get a more robust transportation bill.
I'm looking at your district. Yeah, you just got a little bit of road issue, 35E, 35W, 13 Cedar Avenue, all within your district. And I know they're building the new bridge on 35W right now as we speak. So,
yes.
You know, you're right. And as a guy that right outside my door right now, they are building that new light rail line here into Eden Prairie. And boy, oh boy, wouldn't it be slick if we just tacked on a little bit of a line there at Mall of America and shot that sucker right down across the river on Cedar? Because that would be a real godsend, I think, to the people south of the river.
And there's so many of my people, you know, people in my district that go, you know, that will catch. We go over to Bloomington to catch the light rail. I mean, they can do it on our side as well at the Red Line, which, you know, we have. We'll get people to the Mall of America. But as I said, we've got so many people living out here, plus so many businesses where people could be able to come and work. But we need, you know, there are certain places where it's just so difficult to get from one place to another in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes, you know, I mean, it's, you can't spend hours just going to work and just hoping you're going to get to work on time. So, I mean, that to me is critical to my district.
Yeah. We don't have a metro footprint like New York City, so we shouldn't have drive times comparable to it. That's for sure. Sandra Mason, once again, representative right now, 51A. I'm going to drive people, if that's all right, representative, to your webpage. They can donate. I know volunteering is kind of a wishy-washy thing right now. We'll get to volunteering. I know that you'll have opportunities, but how that manifests itself remains to be seen for a lot of people. But we'll get the volunteer, at least people volunteering for you. MasonForRep.org. MASIN, the number 4, rep.org. I'll link to everything a little bit later on. Representative, nice job. I'm glad that, you know, in trying times, true leadership comes forward, and I'm glad you're in that Minnesota House.
Oh, thank you so very much. It's been nice talking with you. And as far as campaigning, I'm, you know, what I said is we're going to have to be really creative this year. Because a lot of the standards are not going to be able to be used, at least now in the near future. And again, thank you so much.
My pleasure. And remember, donations always help. Sandra Mason, Representative 51A, running for re-election. Lovely chatting with her.